Can you hear me? It's okay. Okay, first, thanks to Louis and Antoine for the invitation to this very exciting meeting. I'm very happy, very pleased to be here. Let me first also acknowledge all the people who have contributed to this work, and maybe mostly the young guns of the NMA group in Grenoble. Three of them are here in the room, so they are here if you have more questions about the details of the experiment. I'm sure you have. My talk is about charge order, mostly in YBCO. These are the experiments we did. Charge order, I'm just defining briefly what we mean by that. Charge order or charge density wave order. I will use maybe charge density wave order because it makes life easier to use the acronym CDW in the slides. That's essentially a special modulation, periodic modulation of the charge density, which is always followed by a modulation of the lattice positions. Okay. We are almost celebrating the 30 years of ITCs, but this year we are actually celebrating two decades of charge order in cuprates. This goes back to this seminal paper that probably most of you know, the discovery of stripes in lanthanum barium copper oxide by John Trancada and co-workers. And you see that the paper was submitted exactly 20 years ago in March. Right. So, charge order is not a new question in ITCs. From the experimental point of view, it dates back to 95, but from the theory and theoretical ideas were already addressing the possibility of charge order even before this experiment from 89, so very, very soon after the discovery of ITCs. And here is a very schematic timeline of some of the important experiments about charge order. So you see that, and of course this is a very arbitrary selection of landmark papers, but I could fill in here with many other important findings about stripe order in the lanthanum cuprates or checkerboard order by STM. It has a long history, and I would say that about a quarter to a third of the speakers of this workshop have been dealing with charge order for quite a long time already. For the anecdote, let me just mention that a long time ago we performed high field NMR experiments in YBCO with the aim of finding something like stripe order stabilized by the high field. That wasn't successful, unfortunately, so that's why you never heard about that. Somehow we were looking, trying to find a needle in a haystack because we didn't have the quantum oscillation experiment that were a compass to drive us to charge order in YBCO. Okay, so let me start with the magnetic field here versus temperature phase diagram of a type 2 superconductor. So at low temperature, below a certain field, you have the superconducting phase, and you have a vortex melting line here. And we know that in ITCs, you have here a crossover, a phase transition, or I'm not going to go into the debate of where it is, but you have a temperature scale, let's say, that marks the onset of unusual properties in the normal state, which are broadly called the pseudo-gap state. Okay, so I'm not going to discuss in details the NMR results, and I'm just going to list the main conclusions that we had, and I want to focus the talk on the open question regarding this phase diagram. So initially we detected charge order from a splitting of the NMR line. So initially it was on copper lines, but we now work mostly on the oxygen, where the oxygen the effect is stronger. So we detected somewhere in this region here, in this red region, a splitting of the NMR line that we attributed to charge density wave order. So there are quite a few things that we can say already about this high field, this charge order in high field. First thing, that it doesn't show any associated spin order in contrast with the stripe phases, which I showed before. Because it doesn't have spin order, we concluded that it must be the charge density waves that reconstruct the Fermi surface. The onset of this line splitting, either as a function of field or temperature, is rather sharp, which suggests, doesn't prove, because NMR is not a thermodynamic probe, but it suggests that it occurs through a phase transition. And these two facts, that it reconstructs severally the Fermi surface and it looks like a phase transition, suggests, but doesn't prove, that the charge order we are talking about is long-range charge order, or reasonably long-range. At least in author 2, the charge order that we observe has a unidirectional character, in the sense that it's not isotropic in the plane, in the A and B direction. I'm not saying it's purely 1D, but at least it has to have a unidirectional nature. Maybe one of the most important findings of this study is that the charge order competes with superconductivity. I will come back to that in a moment. That was shown by the effect of the magnitude and the orientation of the magnetic field. You see here that the temperature at which we detect this charge order is comparable to the TC in zero field. It's typically, I'm speaking for YBCO with a concentration of 6.5 to 6.7, something like that, oxygen here. Typically, TC is about 60K, or 60 to 70K, and T charge in this composition range is somewhere in between 50 and 70K. So it's, I would say, amazingly similar. Since T charge is so high, you do expect charge density wave correlations, at least short-range correlations in the normal state. And probably the most important conclusion that we advocated for in our work was that because YBCO is far cleaner than the stripe and the stripe material and the bismuth material, and it's actually the cleanest of all ITC system, we claim that the charge density wave instability, the tendency to form a charge density wave, must be generic in these materials. Okay, so after we found this charge order in high field, we realized that there was a precursor effect already in the normal state. So here, I'm jumping by a few years in terms of publications, but we found that, and I've been presenting that for several years already. We found a precursor line broadening. So the line broadens before it splits here if the field is sufficiently high. So this corresponds to a weaker charge modulation, weaker in the loose sense, so either weaker amplitude or shorter, with a shorter correlation length. It tells us that there is something really static going on, because NMR is a very low frequency probe. So there is already a static charge modulation in the normal state. And there are a few other things which I won't have time to discuss. The onset temperature, which coincides with the number of electronic anomalies like the Kerr effect. The fact that the response, the Browning, is different on the two oxygen within the unit cell, and the absence of any sign of charge order, of magnetic order at the NMR time scale in the normal state. Okay. So how did we interpret this precursor when we first found these results, we looked back at what is probably the archetype of a charged entity wave system in two dimensions, which is Nabian diselena. So there, already well before the charged density wave transition, which is here around 33 Kelvin, you do observe a Browning of the Yanomami line before the line acquires some very particular shape here in the ordered state. It already broadens, and the offset of the Browning is a bit more than two times the ordering temperature. So these are all results. I think the first is from Claude Berthier and Denis Jérôme here in Orsay in 78, and they interpreted that in terms of short-range charged density wave order nucleated around defects. You always have some defect in your materials, and this will pin the charged density wave fluctuations. Okay, this is now visualized beautifully by STM directly in real space. There are two recent papers about that. So basically what you have here is a 33K is the charge density wave transition. Here is a defect. And around each defect, you have a local patch, if you wish, a halo of short-range charge density wave. So it's a kind of Friedel oscillation, but the period of this oscillation, of this charge density oscillation, is the period of the long-range charge density wave state here at lower temperature. Okay. All right. So to summarize things back in the phase diagram, we have here field-induced charge order, which we presume to be long-range order. And here we have static short-range order, but in analogy with niobium diselenide, this short-range order is made static by this order. It's frozen by this order. It would be otherwise fluctuating. You would only have a charge density wave fluctuation growing on approaching the transition. Okay, so a few words now from the other probes that obtain results regarding this phase diagram here. So this interpretation here in terms of charge density wave fluctuation here and charge density wave order here might find some support in the fact that sound velocity measurements indeed found here indication of a real thermodynamic phase transition. So that would be consistent with a transition towards long-range charge density wave order. So the phase diagram which I showed before was actually worked out by this ultrasound measurement here. I think Cyril will talk about that maybe more in details later. I'll answer after. Okay. Okay. So there is indeed a phase transition here, right? Okay. And then, in the meantime, there has been an avalanche of X-ray scattering studies. So I'm not gonna summarize anything. So there will be talks later in the day. There is much to say. Lots of information and. Very striking results in this data, and I'm just concentrating here on the period is incommensurate, and the correlation length, at least in zero field, is about six times the period of the modulation, right? Charge density wave found by X-ray extends up to high temperature, consistent with the onset that we found in the NMR running. Okay. So this raises a question as to whether the previous interpretation that we made in terms of pinning by impurities of short-range fluctuation on approaching the transition is correct at all. So if essentially, I think the main question here regarding this X-ray results is whether this charge density wave correlation length is a large number or a small number. If you consider it's a small number, then probably the previous interpretation is tenable. That means that if disorder were absent, we would have only charge density wave fluctuation, and the effect of disorder is to freeze locally these fluctuations. In that scenario, the high field transition, which I showed before, is the long-range ordering of the charge density wave. So you may call that in a normal state a kind of embryonic charge density wave, or I don't know, something like that. Okay. But you may also say, well, this is not small. This is actually half as long as in LBCO18, which is the best case of charge order known in cuprates. It's actually six lambda or seven lambda is actually the correlation length that you have in the not in LBCO, but in the neodymium doped 1,8 compound. So it's not shorter than in a strike phase, actually. So if you consider this is big, this makes probably the previous interpretation more fragile, let's say. And you would suspect instead that if disorder were absent, the charge density wave would be long-range ordered. And in that case, the effect of disorder is to break up the charge density wave into finite domains. In that case, the high field transition has to be something else. It cannot be the only transition in the system. It has to be a kind of subsidiary transition, probably less sensitive to disorder, like an incommensurate an incommensurate to commensurate transition. You can call that a vestigial charge density wave or a broken charge density wave. And I refer to this paper where all these ideas are explained. Okay. In any event, you can call that, I think, an incipient charge density wave. You don't compromise yourself in any of these two scenarios. It's an incipient charge density wave in a normal state that has to be pinned by net E defects. That means there is no other way around. You have to accept that disorder does play a role, even in superclean author 2 YBCO. Let me just remark that disorder pinning also affects the charge density wave texture. So this question of disorder should also be considered when discussing the real space texture, especially whether it's 1D or 2D. 5 minutes, okay. All right, so this is a phase diagram. And how could we try to understand more the nature of this transition? So the problem is that this transition has not yet been seen by X-ray diffraction. We don't know why. It may be that the field is not enough, although they went to 17 Tesla. There is no precursor sign of this transition in the X-ray data as a function of field at low temperature. The correlation lengths that do not seem to diverge. And so the only thing that we have so far is ultrasound and NMR. So as far as NMR is concerned, so here I'm reporting the splitting of the NMR line, which you can see as the order parameter. I don't have a proof that it's directly proportional to the magnitude of the charge differentiation, but to first approximation, it should be about proportion. So this line splitting as a function of field evolves in this way when the field is applied along the c-axis. Okay, so it has a square root-like dependence, and this splitting is not seen when you apply the field, even a high field within the plane. Here it was applied, perpendicular to the plane. So this was a direct evidence that what drives the charge density wave order is the destruction of superconductivity by a magnetic field aligned along the c-axis. So the important point here is that there is a transition field, a threshold field in the vortex state towards this charge order. And because time is running, I will be brief here. Well, we proposed an interpretation, at least qualitatively, based on this picture, which we borrowed from this beautiful STM work by Jenny Hoffman and Shimus, of halos of charge density wave order pinned around vortices. And of course, if you increase magnetic field, you will increase the density of these vortices. And at a field which is necessarily lower than HC2, because these halos are larger than the vortex core, at a field which is significantly lower than HC2, these halos of charge order will start to overlap. And we speculated that you might expect long-range order from that. In analogy with the formula for the hypercritical field HC2, you may write the onset field for charge order in the same manner, because this is just governed by the density of these vortices. And if we translate the onset field that we find in NMR at different doping levels into a correction length using this formula, and we compare with the correction length deduced from the X-ray scattering experiment, we have a pretty good match here. So of course, this matches too well to be true. What we are looking for here is only to see whether the orders of magnitude are consistent. So I think they are. Here I'm plotting the correction lengths deduced from measurement in zero field. We know that there is some field dependence of the charge density wave, of the correction length, sorry. So actually the correction length that matters for the onset field is the correction length at this field. It's not as beautiful probably as this picture suggests, but at least this suggests that, qualitatively speaking, that's a way of understanding why we have an onset field for long-range charge order. Okay, an implication is that shorter systems with shorter range charge density wave, like bismuth or mercury compounds, would have much larger H charge onset field. Okay, so that's a way of qualitatively understanding this field-induced transition. I'm not saying that we understand much of the nature of this transition, because, as I said before, the NMR data look like a second-order phase transition, but I'm not sure that in this picture of overlapping halos you would expect the transition to be second-order. I don't know. That's an open question. One thing that worries us is that in very similar samples, and we know that the samples are very reproducible, samples from UBC and even samples from UBC and the Max Planck Institute in Stuttgart, they are amazingly reproducible for the same TC. So for two very similar samples, although we are working at two different temperatures, the onset field found in NMR and the onset field found in ultrasound measurement is significantly different. So we are a bit puzzled by this discrepancy, whether it's a serious problem or not. I think experimental errors are ruled out. In principle, we should be professionals in measuring the magnetic fields. I could imagine that the phase diagram has a kind of cusp here at low field, maybe the expected extrapolated dependence here that as a downward curvature here when you enter in the vortex solid state. I don't know, that's just pure speculation. It could be that NMR, is being a local probe, starts to see a line splitting even though the charge density wave is not yet long-range ordered. Because this order plays a prominent role, it's very unlikely that this is a very sharp transition. It has to be rounded. So in that case, we might see local order first. So I'm done here. So charge density wave is an important piece of the high TC puzzle. I think most of the speakers would agree with that. It's ubiquitous. It impacts on many electronic properties. I didn't have time to discuss that. It's related to superconductivity in a way or another. The simplest and most negative way would just be that they are competitors. We are many to think that there is more than that, which does not mean necessarily that the link is a causality link. It may be that they have just common origin, that they are twins. Well, these things are open, but in a way or another, it's linked to the physics that drives superconductivity. Yet, its exact nature, as I try to exemplify here from the field temperature phase diagram, its exact nature, I think, remains to be worked out. Thank you.
Thank you very much.